Christian greetings and a warm welcome to everybody gathered here this evening. I trust that the Spirit of God has already begun to open our minds and hearts to the Word, and I enjoyed the devotional that we heard tonight. There's thoughts that the brother shared that definitely fall in line with what we have for a message tonight. Just trust that everyone feels welcome here, and encourage you to participate in prayer and reverence of our high and holy God as we look into His Word again tonight. Oftentimes, early in a week of meetings of this nature, my mind goes to the subject of sin and its effects on the lives of people. Since the fall of man in Genesis chapter 3, the awful reality is that sin is and has been in the world. The Bible tells us that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We are all born with a sinful nature, and most of us who are beyond the age of accountability well know the effects of our own sin to some degree or another. I want to make clear right from the very beginning that children are innocent. They do things they should not do. They get angry sometimes. One might smack another one or be mean in some way or another. But the Bible would teach us that children are innocent before God. In other words, they are not responsible to God for what they do wrong. And you know as well as I that sometimes with a little apology between two little ones, or a correction, things can happen that, and if it's done in a right way, a few minutes later they can be smiling and happy, and the offense is long since forgotten. But there comes a time and there comes an age when an apology to mom or dad or the school teacher doesn't work anymore. If you were to give them certain kinds of correction, they would feel as guilty when it's over as before, because they realize at a certain age, and that varies in children and young people, and adolescents, it varies. Some of them are older, some of them are younger. But there comes a day in their lives whenever they realize that the sin they commit is because they've sinned against God. They've broken God's law. And whenever that day comes in a person's life, they realize the need that they have of a Savior, one who takes away their sin and the reality of that. And then there's others who never have heard, who do not know. Maybe they never heard. It is amazing how many people are in our world who have no idea of how to get rid of this problem of sin. We probably have seen the results of an ungodly life in neighbors, in friends, and possibly even family members. What the results of it are, what the cost of sin is, we probably observe some of that in our lives already. You can probably think of someone right now who, because of sin, things have happened. Sad things have happened. Disastrous things have happened. And maybe they aren't even living because of the result of their sin. It's such a sad day, isn't it, when that happens? The title tonight is The Bondage of Sin. And I'm going to start out with a few examples that are things that I have personally dealt with and seen. Things that is some examples of some dear people. And some of them I did not know well, but some of them we did know. I start with the mother of the first baby that we had, of incarcerated mother. We got there, it was a day in late in December, right close to Christmas time. There was a snowstorm in eastern Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia City had about 12 inches of snow. I had a Toyota pickup truck, was driving an 8 to 10 inches of snow in downtown Philly. Going from red light to red light, nowhere to tell where the lines were on the road, it was covered with snow. But we had to be there to pick up this baby. We got into the Thomas Jefferson Hospital, And my wife and I went through the elevators and got to the floor where we were supposed to pick up this little baby. We got in, got to the room, and I will probably never forget, as long as I have a sane mind, what I saw there. This incarcerated mother with two armed guards, a man and a woman, in her room with pistol on the sides. You know how an armed guard would be, a police, in other words, prison guard, there in the room. And she had a handcuff around her ankle and fastened to the railing of the bed. Imagine such a thing. A mother who had just given birth to a baby. And she knew why we came. And there she was giving this bottle to this little black bundle in her arms. And mamas have feelings, I'm telling you. And when I realized that we're taking this baby from this mother, and she realized it and knew it. And there she is with her ankle handcuffed to the rail of the bed. Two armed guards in the room. Imagine such a thing. And there she is holding this little one. But she knows in a few minutes she must turn this little one over to somebody else. People she's never seen in her entire life. And yet, because of sin, because of wrongdoing, she is forced to do what she has to do. It's so pathetic. And they can cry. It's sad. It's so sad. And she did, that poor lady. And all we could do, I mean, we have time to be there, but after a while, the medical staff makes it clear it's time for you to leave. We got to get this lady back to where she belongs. And the tears can flow, and the sobs can break out. And the only thing I knew to do was pray God's mercy upon her. As we took that little baby and tried to care for it as a part of our lives on and off for a period of 9 months. But I'm afraid tonight, unless the story, as far as I know, the lady's still a slave to sin. She's been in and out of prison at least once, if not more than that since. And I don't know the story from there, because since September of about 2011, we haven't seen that little one. Know very little about her. But it was a graphic illustration of the bondage of sin, where sin can take a person. A slightly different illustration is one that I saw. I was in a psychiatric ward one day, and this poor young lady, about 12 or 13 years old, and how this happens at this age, I have no idea, except that I know that in Bible examples you read about stuff like this. But this girl, 13 or so years old, according to my estimation, was walking up to the walls, bucking and banging her fists and gyrating all around and slamming and kicking and carrying on, just totally out of control. Just kicking into things and bamming up against the wall and jumping. I would illustrate it, but it's not quite proper for a preacher to do it all up here. But I'm telling you, friends, those kind of people might not live very far from where you do, that kind. Because life is serious out there. It's no joke. It is serious business. I knew a man, a boy, actually a teenager. He would travel around to the different Mennonite communities in Costa Rica when I was still single at home. And he would give the last penny. He told me, I will give to the last penny cologne that I have in my fingers for more pornography. He didn't care if he had to walk down in a 100-degree day on Blacktop Road barefooted. He would give his shoes on his feet for more pornography. A slave to it! And yet when I one day tried to present to him the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ and this possibility that he could be saved from that, he blasphemed God and used horrible language. Because he's a slave to sin. He's in bondage, my friends. And the last time I saw him, somebody was kind of making fun of him and had a rock, a huge rock in his hand, as big as he could wield, and he was ready to throw it at the window of that truck. And I hollered at him because I knew him, and I saw him doing that. I said, "Hey, Ron, quit that." And he quick turned around and saw me there, and I, as far as I know, was the last I ever saw him. Still a slave to the sin of his choosing. Have you ever seen a person who struggles with strong drink? I've had several dear friends who have had that problem. And they come to you and they're in hangover. In Spanish they call it goma. The hangover's on them and they're vomiting and sick and not well at all. And hey, could you just give me a couple more pennies to go buy some more stuff? And I said, my friend, I can't do that. But maybe we can get you some bread or something that's good to eat, good to drink. So you take them into a store and there they go stumbling in behind you. Do you know what the bondage of sin is tonight? Have you lived there? One of the more recent accounts was a man we were working with. He'd come to church and he could get his Bible open, and I guarantee that most preachers, including myself, after he gets his Bible out and starts laying out this one and that one and the next one and passages in Revelation, he just goes digging down through it. But there was a problem. He could do that on one hand, but he was a slave to sin. We could, as soon as he would get out of a certain atmosphere in Bible study, and he was a good student, his mind would immediately go to horrible stuff. Drinking, occultism to the max. Horrible stuff, my friends. I mean terrible. He could say such gross things, bloodshed, murder, abortion. He'd tell stories to where a man would just need to walk away and say, God, help us. What kind of sin is out there in this world? So one night, another brother and I sat down with him and we said, the problem with you, my friend, is that you're a slave to sin. You're a slave of Satan, and you need to have these powers broken in your life. You need to have these powers broken in your life. And we prayed for him, and we asked him to renounce the hidden things of dishonesty, renounce the powers of darkness. You need to listen to him tell stuff that he's been involved with. Oh, God, have mercy on us. This stuff happens in our world, and probably happens not far from here as well. This world is sick with sin all over the place. And then just last week, or the week before last in Belize, there was a fellow that just came back. He was dealing in drugs. And whenever you deal in drugs, you go from one kind to the next. And he had just been involved with a deep dose, heavy dose of meth. And the fact is that while we were there, he was in some terrible outrages. His mind is basically, and part of his brain, they would say, is already gone. Disaster, it's all nothing there because of meth. It's horrible stuff, my friends. He was a terror in that community, chasing people with knives and machetes, and going into his parents' house and grabbing the furniture and just tossing it out in the yard. Just happened while we were there, and the church family neighbors are right there beside him. They saw the whole thing happen. They kept telling, every day we heard another story. And would to God that something could happen, but thank the Lord, at least the church, he was at your congregation in Carmelita on Sunday morning. Thank God he was there. I don't know what message gets through when the mind is that gone, and that is messed up. I don't know, but at least he was in church, and he was very respectable in church, they said. But these are the things that the bondage of sin brings to us. It's serious stuff. So where did sin begin? Let's go in our Bibles, if you care to Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah chapter 14 and verse 12. Where did sin begin? How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast in thine heart, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake the kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? And I'm going to tell us tonight, if we're in bondage to sin, if we're in bondage to any kind of vices or ungodliness, the devil will not open the house of his prisoners. He does not. He will not. Are you in bondage to sin tonight? I'm not good in prophetic word, but there's some verses back in Revelation chapter 12 that talk about the event whenever Lucifer was cast out of heaven. If you take a little pause in Ezekiel 28, you read about the beauty that he must have had before he was cast to the earth. Some of the beautiful things that he must have had around him and been with him, parts of heaven that are beyond our knowledge. But there's a little description in Ezekiel 28, but we're not going there. We're in Revelation 12, and I'm not going to read this whole chapter. We're going to read a few verses here. Verse 7, Revelation 12, 7. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels. And the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a great voice, a loud voice, saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Wherefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you having great wrath, because he knoweth he hath but a short time. And in that world we live. And in that world the devil is still waging his war against the saints. And in this war, he is still involved. He is still out to destroy the hearts and lives of men. He makes the world as a wilderness. It looks kind of pretty when you travel across the countryside and see the farms and all that goes on there. But when you look at what people's lives really, 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 really are and what the homes are like, it seems like it's just falling apart in many places. It's so sad. And destroyed the cities thereof. And the devil doesn't care. He doesn't care one bit. He has people in bondage to sin, and he wants to keep them that way. And he wants you and I to stay that way. We are looking at a bleak picture tonight. The bondage of sin. It's real serious, my friends. And then if we go to the chapter earlier than where our brother read in devotions, you probably figured I was gone there after a while. Genesis chapter 3. So common is the account, and yet so real. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband and with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and sewed fig leaves together, and made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord amongst the trees of the garden. And the Lord God called unto Adam and said, where art thou? And he said, I have heard thy voice in the garden, was afraid because I was naked and hid myself. And he said, who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat? And the man said, the woman whom thou gavest me to be with me, she gave me of the fruit of the tree. She gave me of the tree, and I did eat. So where did sin begin? It began in the Garden of Eden. Where does sin begin? The Apostle John tells us in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, number one, the lust of the eyes, number two, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. any sin that you have ever seen or heard about or indulged in yourself, and anything that I have ever been involved with is either one of those three: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, or the pride of life. It's not of the Father, it's of the world. And we see it all right here. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, she saw lust of the eyes. And a tree to be desired to make one wise. We see it there. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes. I want to eat this stuff. I see it. It looks good. And the pride of life. I want to be wise. It's right there. And not everything can you diagnose just that easily, but if we're having problems tonight, if we're in bondage to sin, it's either lust of the flesh, selfishness, pampering my flesh, my carnality. It's something I want to see, and I want to see, and I want to see, and I know I shouldn't, but I want to see it. Or it's because I just feel that ego. I just want to just get somewhere in life. I just want to push ahead. And pride pushes me into places I should never go. Now we want to look next at the results and effects of sin. I just want to read a couple verses on this, just different selections. You can listen if you care to. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sin. Remember tonight what I said at the beginning. The devil, if you are bound by him tonight, he will not open the house of his prisoners. You will be holden with the cords of sin. And those cords are strong, my friends, tonight. They're really strong. The cords of vices and habits. The cords of anger and bitterness. They're strong cords. And the devil will not loose the house of his prisoners. He will not loosen them from there. Once they're in his prison, they stay there. He will not let them loose. Jesus answered them, Verily I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. If you read the Spanish Bible, it says, whoever practices sin is a slave of sin. A slave of sin. And the devil will not loose those from the house of his prison. He will not. A slave of sin. For I perceive that thou art in the gall of bitterness and in the bond of iniquity. Peter said that to Simon the sorcerer. In the bond of iniquity, bound tight with iniquity. Sounds like bondage to me. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness, that they may recover themselves from the snare of the devil, who hath taken them captive by him at his will. While they promised them liberty, they themselves are servants of corruption. For whom a man is overcome of the same is brought into bondage. And the devil will not open the house of his prisoners. A person who is bound by sin by the devil will stay there until the greater one comes. The one who has more power, until he comes, a person will stay in the prison house of the devil. So how is it in my life and yours tonight? What are the results and effects of sin? It is Satan's goal to destroy the design of God, the plan of God, and the work of God in people's lives, in my life, in your life, in the church, and in the world. It is his design, his plan is to destroy God's design, God's plan, and God's work. And he doesn't care how he does it. But once he has it, he has it. Because he will not open the house of his prisoners. It's a serious thing, my friends. Sin, first of all, separates us from God. Separates us from God. Sin brings fear and shame. How shameful it is, how sad it is. The fear that comes along with sin. I'm afraid I'm going to get found out. I'm afraid of what people are going to say. What will they ever say if they find out this? Do you know what that's like? Has it ever been your experience? The fear and shame of sin. The misery. I knew a brother one day that had done something he should never have done. And he said he did not sleep for 2 entire nights because it was just misery. And yet when the moment, it looks so appealing. Oh, my friends, the bondage of sin, it's horrible. And it's deceptive on top of that. There's deception. There's deception. We can, after a while, accustom somewhat to the idea. We know that if we just come, well, maybe we'll just withdraw our church membership. Maybe that'll take care of it. Maybe we'll just go to another church. Somebody's a little easier on certain things. Maybe it'll go better there. And maybe there's somebody out there that can just give me a couple words of consolation and kind of butter some of this stuff over. Maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. There's sadness. There's no joy. There's sadness. Do you know any sinner tonight that is really rejoicing, that really has a happy life? They can smile, they can dance, they can have all kinds of fun times, and the smile's big on the front of the face. It might appear that way, and I'm not going to say, the Bible does say there's pleasure in sin, but look at the tears behind the scenes. I wonder how many young people that are bound by sin tonight go to bed and don't cry when they have some secret moments. I wonder about how many people who stand in front of cameras and it looks all glamorous and glorious in those movies and whatever have you, and don't go to bed and cry because of the chains of their sin that have dragged them down to where they are. No joy. It makes us distant from God and His people. I already mentioned that. And then there's bondage. There's bondage. There's slavery. And behind it all, there's an awareness of judgment. There's an awareness that one of these days this life is over. Maybe a friend of theirs is now passed, like they say. They don't want to say he was killed, or they say he passed. Maybe it was a drug overdose. I work in a shop where a lot of the time we have a scanner going because one of the fellows I work with is an assistant fire chief, so anything that's happening in 3 counties around ours, we hear it on the scanner. Almost continuous goings on in the number of suicides in a week's time, attempted suicides, overdoses, the horrific accidents that happen within an hour of where we work. It's phenomenal. And so people have somewhere down, way down inside, an awareness of judgment. Awareness that there's a God out there somewhere. Awareness. These are effects of sin. So what's the devil's answer to the sin problem? What's the devil's answer to the sin problem? Number one, I've already said, and it's fear. Scared. There's a large majority of our world's population that lives in fear. They're scared to go to bed. They're scared for quiet time. If the music were shut off and everything would get quiet, I mean, and the cell phone would stop working, internet would quit, I mean, people go hysterical. You know that as well as I. People just can't handle it because I don't have my music. I don't have my contacts. Well, what should I do? And fear. And what would I do if? And then the list is long, and anxiety kills them. Say more drugs and more prescription drugs and maybe another psychiatrist visit. Maybe that'll help take care of this fear. But at the bottom root of it all, it probably could be sin. What's the devil's answer to the sin problem? More sin. Just a little more of it. You didn't see the worst movies yet. You didn't take the strongest drugs yet. There's stronger mixes of alcohol out there. You can get a little more angry tomorrow than you were yesterday. You can go to prison yet if you aren't there. There's more sin out there, my friends. And the devil offers it more yet. So if you're a drunkard today, you can be a drug addict tomorrow. If you're immoral today, you can add violence to it. And I'm going to tell us something. There's a close, in this whole thing of sin, immorality and violence run arm in arm. Because where the one is, the other one is. Oftentimes. And a deceiving factor is that there's another church out there that'll take you in with more sin regardless. There's another preacher out there that could claim that he can get you through the pearly gates, whether you're living clean or not. The stories I hear that prove that fact are almost unbelievable sometimes. And how is it in your life and mine? The bondage of sin. It's serious business, my friends, when we think about it. I know of a young couple that were raised in a very conservative setting, but little by little the devil got a hold of them, and they were going to rent a nice big farmhouse so they could have a family. But I'm going to tell you something. It was never good for me to be close. Whenever that lady was out mowing her yard, she used to dress as plain as anyone sitting here, but it's not fit to see her in a hot summer day. And it's terrible. And something happened. And yet I'm sure, from what I understand of them, that she could tell you how to get saved and have freedom and freedom in Jesus. But she's a slave of sin. And a brother and I saw her walking her famous dog. They don't have any children yet that I know of. Was walking her dog out along the road one day and said, "See that lady there? Thank God she had a little more on right then than she does sometimes." He said, "That lady's got freedom of religion. And I'm afraid she's got freedom from, maybe she doesn't have Jesus either. Freedom from religion, but maybe and probably don't have Jesus either." I'm telling you, my friends, the devil will offer you more sin, and there'll be a church out there that'll say, "Come right on in. You can be a member with us and do all this stuff." But what does Jesus say? Jesus is the judge at the end of the day, at the end of the world. Will it be all right or not? Are you in bondage to sin tonight? Am I? We ought to answer those questions. And I'm going to tell us something else. The devil, his answer for sin is more entertainment. More entertainment. I asked my father, who travels a whole lot more than I do, I asked him, "How do you find it when you go through airports and visit with people and their earbuds are in there, the movie's on the cell phone, on the screen, they're glued in, entertained. I go to old people's homes and I'm appalled by what's on the TV screen. And they're there and they're hanging in the balances of life and death at 80 or 90 or 100 years old. And they're with the oxygen mask on and everything else and just as thin as what they can be and probably haven't eaten or drunk anything for however long. And the horrible stuff that's on those TV screens, and the devil's taking them right into hell, entertained. Entertained. You can wake up in the morning with rock music on your alarm clock and away it goes. Entertainment. You see the vehicles pass you in the nighttime and the video screens are down in the back seats of the minivans or the SUVs. Entertainment. They can't live a minute without it. And the devil will take them to hell entertained. And that's where it stops, right there. At death's door, entertainment will stop, my friends. What else does the devil offer? He offers a ruined life. And I know that the power of Jesus can change. Change a ruined life to a life of value. Even though the devil's chains have been bound long and hard. There's beautiful things have happened. Yes, they have. But there will be effects of sin. There is a reaping for sin. And it's a hard reality, and I wish it wouldn't be that way, but I can't change God's rules. And then if nothing else works, then suicide works. Just get out of it. Put that pistol to your head and it's all over in a second. You're gone. Really? It is appointed unto man once to die, and after that the judgment. The devil offers multitudes of counterfeits in life, but he offers nothing in death, nothing at all, but eternal damnation, because he knows that's where people are headed. And as long as he can keep them entertained enough, he will not open the house of his prisoners. He will not. When we start down the road of sin, our flesh desires more liberty and more freedom of expression. And yet our spirit is brought into deeper slavery and deeper bondage. And farther from God we go, and there's no telling where that road will stop. If we start down that road of sin, maybe I just want a little room for my little desire over here. I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to go and check that one out a little bit. I know I shouldn't go to this place, but I'm just going to go there anyway. Our flesh desires and demands more and more gratification, and yet our spirit is more and more bound. One of the things that I wanted to mention whenever I talk about this thing of the devil's answer to the sin problem, it requires more and more involvement, but gives less and less pleasure. And that is exactly why addictions occur. Because you need something stronger, something more powerful, more involvement with evil things, and yet you get less and less pleasure out of it. And addictions start right there. And that's the devil's program, to give more and more involvement in evil doing, stronger drugs, stronger alcohol, or whatever it is, more wicked movies. Go from the one that gives more and more involvement, and yet you get less and less pleasure out of it. And that forces people to addictions. Are you a slave to sin tonight? I say again, when we start down the road of sin, our flesh desires more liberty and freedom of expression, and yet our spirit is brought into deeper slavery and bondage, and we come farther and farther away from God and His people, and there's no telling how far we will go. We don't know where that end, the end of that road is. I ask us tonight, what does sin cost? What does sin cost? Who will pay for your sin and mine? Who will pay for it? I think of the words of that song, and it was a tape that came to our house years ago. And I lay there sometimes just relaxing a bit, and the tears would just run down my face of thinking about friends of mine that were in this condition that I've described tonight. And the song and the words go like this: is there no freedom from chains of transgression? Is there no power to rend them apart? And when you think of someone tonight, maybe it's your own life, and you know you're bound by sin. Is there any freedom from the chains of transgression? Is there power to rend those cords of iniquity apart? Is there power? I'm here to tell us tonight that there is. You know, Jesus came to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. Does that sound like good news? Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14. You don't have to turn there. Just listen if you want to. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that hath the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through the fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. That's good news, my friends. That's good news. Are you free tonight? Those two verses are special to me. You know that I said last night, this thing of little children, this thing of babies is precious to me. My wife and I in 2005 went to the country of Bolivia, South America. We're there for some evangelistic work and helping with a little effort there. Possibility of moving there at that point in our lives. And the missionary who was in that little town of Concepcion said, Virgil, he said, we got a problem across town here. He said, there's a little baby was born. And the Catholic priest tells them that unless they really shell out that money, that baby is in a dark and ugly place. Unless you just give us that money, and that cathedral in that town is lined on the front with gold. Seriously. It is one of the most ornate places you can imagine in that town. There's gold in that cathedral. They claim that there's, the legend claims that there's a big snake under that building, and that the priest feeds it. Believe that one if you want to. But this priest says, unless you give me that money stuff, your baby's going to stay in a dark and ugly place. And they said, can you, as a minister of the gospel or as a missionary, I was there as a missionary only, I wasn't ordained then, but can you do anything to help this young couple? They're just distressed over the fact that their poor baby is in a terrible place like this. And that's when these verses came real to me. That through death he might destroy him that hath the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through the fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. And I had the privilege of going there and reading verses like that. That their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. Those things are such a blessing whenever a little child is called from our presence and taken from our arms. That their angels watched over them from the day they were conceived. And if God called them home, well then, he knew what he was doing. But to offer that, there's a couple verses about the only thing I knew, and then pray with that couple. May God bless this couple. Take away that fear. You don't need to pay money to get a baby out of a dark and ugly place. My friends, you don't have to do that. It's all taken care of. There's people who live in bondage. Jesus says in John 8, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Do we believe it tonight? If the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. There is therefore now no condemnation to them which are in Christ Jesus, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made me free from the law of sin and death. Are you free tonight? Or are you in bondage to sin? First John chapter 3. And here I close tonight. First John chapter 3. And verse 8, "He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil." Do you believe that tonight? Destroy the works of the devil. I love the way it says it in Spanish. It says, "He who practices sin is of the devil, for the devil sins from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might tear apart the works of the devil." You know, the devil will never let his prisoners out of the prison house. He never will. And if you're there tonight, he's not letting you out either. But there's someone that can come in and tear apart the works of the devil. And Jesus came to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. So how is it tonight in your life and mine? If God's speaking to your heart tonight, I'm not planning to give an invitation every night, but I guess I feel that maybe we just should tonight. Most of us know the first verse of "Would you be free from your burden of sin? There's power in the blood." If God's speaking to your heart tonight and you know you're bound and you're in the prison house of the devil, and your pastor might not know it, your husband or wife might not know it, your dad and mom might not know it, but you know it, I invite you to respond by raising your hand until you're recognized. And I know that there's someone who'd be glad to visit with you after the service. Let's sing reverently and prayerfully. Would you